Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Gonna give him one more minute. He'll be here or else.
Or else what?
I don't know.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 190 for the week of February 5th, 2018. I am Barely Eaten Anger Apple, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Lookout Sack, Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh, you know it.
Backpack Moistener, Tara Ariano.
Splash!
And Homework Enthusiast, Monty Ashley.
No, seriously, grade me.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Extra Hot Great. Before we get into the episode proper, a little bit of site business up at the top. Sometime soonish, it may not be this week, it might be next week, it might be the week after that, but sometime soon, the Extra Hot Great minis will be split off into their own feed for reasons I won't bore you with. We will let you know again, but at some point, they will stop appearing on the feed you are currently subscribed to. And if you're not subscribed to this feed, God damn it, why aren't you? Do it. Soon we'll have two feeds, so you'll be able to listen to Extra Hot Great flagship episodes on this one, and there will be a new one for Extra Hot Great mini feeds, and that's just the way it'll be soon moving forward. I will warn you again, but I figured the more warning, the better it is for everybody involved. Okay, that is the end of site business. Let's get to this week's topic. It is AP Bio, and that is not Associated Press Bio, which I thought it was when I first heard about this episode. I didn't know what AP was. It's not something I ever heard of living in Canada.
Yes,
I guess.
It's not a Canadian thing.
Yeah. And this week we are joined by none other than Monty Ashley. Hello, Monty.
Hey.
Hi, Monty.
Hello.
Yay!
Yeah. Oh, another piece of site business. This is the last episode that is going to be airing with the use of our soundboard called Soundboard. We're graduating to a new system next week. So just be prepared for a lot of growing pains when it comes to sound clips next week. Just warning you guys.
So in this episode, we're going to hear every single clip you have available to you, right?
Forgiveness, please.
Say.
I mean, if you want. All right, AP Bio. It's the new NBC sitcom. Tara, you want to take a crack at the synopsis here for everybody?
Sure. Did we welcome Monty already?
Yes, we did.
Okay. I suggested Monty as our guest because the star of AP Bio, which comes to us from creator Mike O'Brien, formerly a Saturday Night Live writer, and executive producers Seth Meyers and Mike Schumacher, maker both of Late Night with Seth Meyers and other things, because the show stars Glenn Howerton, currently also of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And we know from Monty's Nonak presentation that he is a fan of that show. But how different is Jack Griffin of AP Bio? He's the star of the show. Glenn Howerton's character, he's returned to Toledo to live in his dead mom's apartment because he's been disgraced in his job as a philosophy professor at Harvard. How different is this guy from Dennis? Monty, your thoughts?
Well, Dennis is a horrible person who thinks he's a good person, and the show knows he's a bad person. This guy is a horrible person on purpose, and the show thinks that's great. They're both kind of sociopaths. Dennis is a sociopath in that he occasionally says things like he doesn't have feelings anymore. This guy's a sociopath just because he's ruining children's lives for fun. I was not into this show.
Oh, okay.
This guy's a jerk.
Yeah, I was curious to know how much of a jerk he would be, given that it's a network sitcom. Like, I thought they're going to have to give him a little bit of sweetness at the, you know, even if it's only in the last minute of every episode. The pilot doesn't. A couple of the other episodes maybe come close. But Sarah, you sounded surprised. What did you think of the show as a non-sitcom person?
I enjoyed it. There were some like little things in there that just made me laugh. Like, I paused on his late mom's Kennedy painting with Jesus comforting John.
Yeah.
And laughed for 5 minutes. I'm smiling again, thinking about it. I liked that the kids were well cast to look like normal kids. Mm-hmm. This is a show whose writers understand what it was to be a grade grubber in advanced placement classes, as I was, not bio. I gave up on science after like my sophomore year in high school. I was like, I'd rather take 2 other languages.
Same.
Nope. No more frogs. But just like it was really stuffed. I think it is going to mutate into more of a like learning and hugging thing because network and like they always kind of have to. It has to evolve a little bit. But, you know, when Desna shows up in episode 2, I was like, okay, that, like I'm in. And like the nurse, like trying to teach them AP bio and, you know, this is my cervix. Who can tell me the 5 things that are wrong with it? Like there were some really great lines in there. And I liked that there was this surrealness to it. Like when he's in the lounge with the other teachers, like when are they ever in class? It's unclear. And like, I just like that there are enough sort of surreal elements that are so sitcom-y, like they're so sit that it makes it more calm for me because it's not trying to be realistic. I don't know if I'm going to make an effort to keep watching it, but compared to my experience with One Day at a Time, which felt homeworky, as it were, this was fun. I laughed. I may be a sociopath.
I was going to say, I think this segment is just going to be shining a light on us more than the TV show. So, Monty, I'm actually kind of fascinated. So, I too like Always Sunny in Philadelphia, at least while I was still watching it. There came a time where I think I just got like bored with the conceit after a while. But like for the 4 or 5 seasons that I watched it, I just really genuinely enjoyed how mean-spirited it was. And that's me. I really love mean-spirited comedies. That's why usually I gravitate towards British comedies, which have more of a bite to them than American comedies, I find, generally speaking. But like, so what's the differential for you between why sort of the mean-spiritedness of AP Bio doesn't work for you, whereas it can work for you in Always Sunny?
In It's Always Sunny, the gang are scumbags, mm-hmm. and they're usually trying to do something outside their range, and they screw up, hurting other people, but also themselves.
Right.
In AP Bio, this guy, my problem is I'm identifying with the kids, which the show hates these kids, and also hates Toledo. So it's all, you stupid kids, which is weird because it's advanced placement biology. These kids applied to be in this class. The show makes a big deal about how he's just going to give them all A's, which doesn't matter because they have to pass a test at the end of the year to get credit for having taken AP Bio. And he's not going to have taught them anything. So he's just ruining their lives.
So you're concerned with these fictional students' real life consequences.
What if some of them want to be doctors, Dave?
Yeah.
I get it.
He's got one class to teach and he can't be bothered to show up for the 1 hour a day that he is signed up for.
If I may impart some wisdom once again,
you can try
for the second time this month, maybe from the Simpsons. Children, future, future.
I thought they sort of addressed that by having the fight about letting them have their textbooks, because I sort of figured we're going to find out they're learning on their own because they are grinds. Not that that excuses his behavior. It does not. But I also suspect like that there's a reckoning perhaps coming about the test, and he's going to find out that he can't just give them all A's because he'll still get in trouble. And I'm not sure that the show does hate the kids.
It hates Sarika. This kid always raising her hand, and it hates that stupid nerd who's the class president. Stupid nerd, why aren't you a cool football player?
That was not my take on that episode at all, which we should be a little bit cute about because that's episode 4 and it hasn't aired yet. These are episodes we got in advance, and it'll be coming up, I guess, in March when the show premieres for real. It just has had a sneak peek last Thursday, and then the episodes 2 and 3 are also available on demand in various by various means. But I thought Jack ended up looking worse there, particularly when we find out that the supposed villain in that episode doesn't actually understand. He's in the dark about what he's supposedly done wrong. And I thought the show had empathy for him, but I can take your different interpretation.
Well, you know, I hate kids, so I don't really have a problem Monty.
All right, fair.
Monty has. The show is told through the prism of, you know, this terrible, disgraced Harvard professor. And I get that. I mean, my problem with the kids more so, they're very caricature-y. The bookworm.
The Tracy Flick.
The geek.
Yeah.
So once they start getting a little more nuanced, you know, then I'll probably care what happens to them a little bit more. But right now, I'm happy to see this Grinch of a character just kind of make its way through his terrible life. For me, in that way, it's sort of like It's Always Somewhat Sunny in Philadelphia. It's sort of like a lesser version of Dennis walking through sort of a dream state.
This is Dennis's fantasy where he has actually achieved something, which is becoming an award-winning philosopher, but yet he still fucked it up even in his own fantasy, perhaps.
But there's been so many bad X shows. There's even been Bad Teacher, although that was a movie.
It was a show too, briefly.
Well, I was never on Jack's side. And if you're not on Jack's side, this is just a show about some jerk.
I'm not sure that was necessary for me. I mean, I don't know, like as a whatever, again, grade grubber AP emerita, it was like, you know, I just feel like these are kids that like there is another section at this school and they can transfer into it and they didn't. And after that, I'm just not going to like try to retcon it that much. But while we're talking about being on the sides of various characters or people, some of the panelists have, shall we say, mixed feelings about Patton Oswalt as a force in the culture. How did we feel about him as the principal here?
I thought he was fine. I thought he was used to good minimal effect here. The thing that bothers me with latter year Patton Oswalt is that he is
patent pending Oswalt.
Patent medicine Oswalt.
Patent leather Oswalt. Ooh, sorry.
All right, we all got one.
Proceed, Dave.
His sort of ubiquity kind of bothered me. Actors that are choosier are a little easier to get along with. That's my hang up. You know, he was reined back here, and I think what he brings to the table is perfectly fine. And he plays that schlubbish sort of insecure principal character very well. I had absolutely no problem with here.
Yeah, I thought he was fine here as a comic character in a comic environment. I would rather see him do stuff like this than Justified. Monty, your thoughts?
I'm kind of surprised he's the supporting character because isn't he more famous than Glenn Howerton?
But is he cuter than Glenn Howerton?
Well,
is he cheaper than Glenn Howerton?
Yeah.
Would we believe him as someone who had formerly had an awesome life? Like, you know, as Dave said, he's the schlubby guy. Like he would have a hard time filling all of the Jack boxes, yeah. I guess.
I thought he did fine. Like he's good at that kind of, oh God, all right, kind of tone of voice. I did feel sorry for the principal who's just trying to make this guy teach a class. What we're asked to believe is that in Toledo, it's very important to a public school principal to have a Harvard professor. I don't know why, but I really hope there is at some point some sort of pageant where he's like talking to the other schlubby principals in town. And he's like, check out the guy I got. I want to see him bragging on this alleged star he has.
Yeah, he's fine. I think the better, more famous person in the episodes that have aired so far is definitely Nishi Nash as the teacher union representative. Mm-hmm. It's too bad she's not a regular character because I thought that episode was the best. And
boy, she should be.
On everything. Yeah, agree.
A lot of energy to that episode.
Yeah. I feel like there'd be lots of excuse to bring in a teacher's union representative.
Yeah. That is true. That is a very good point. Yeah, so if they can manage to film AP Bio season 2 whenever Claus is not filming, then all the better for it, I think.
Yeah, I was gratified to see that over the course of the 4 episodes, they did seem to, whoever said it seemed overstuffed, I agree. Was that Monty?
Nope.
No, that was me, but it wasn't necessarily a clock. There was a lot of stuff, and if something wasn't working, you were onto the next thing in like 2 seconds, so.
Oh, okay, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff established in the pilot that sort of falls away, and I think that's wise that they're sort of refining their focus. Like, in the pilot, we get, I have a date with my, I'm going to go bang my high school ex, and then, like, she never comes back, spoiler, and, you know, the whole thing with his nemesis who's written this best-selling book. That seems like something they're only intermittently interested in. I also suspect that these episodes were not originally intended to be aired in this order, because in episode 3, we have him introducing himself to the school nurse who's already been in episode 2. Like, I feel like they maybe moved up the Niecy Nash episode because of the Niecy Nash of it all. but I by episode 4, I felt like it was more confident, and I laughed a lot. I mean, I can't disagree with anything Monty says. Jack is a terrible person, but the question will be, like, how terrible he is and how much of it is a redemption story, I guess.
And how much that bothers you personally.
Yeah,
because me personally, it doesn't bother me. I love assholes on TV shows, frankly. And if it's the show's mean-spirited, the thick of it is, you know, obviously a very different show, but it is mean-spirited, usually without cherry on top ending either. And I love it. This is a mirror to yourself. You know, we're learning Monty is a better person than I am. I think we knew that already.
Yeah, I was going to say, learning. More like reviewing material. Sure.
The show I want to watch is the one set 25 years ago, where Patton Oswalt is captain of the Glee Club and Niecy Nash is his enemy.
Oh my God, yes. Please let there be a flashback musical episode. His delivery of, and you were flatting, good day. Perfect.
They could even cast her beautiful daughter, who looks exactly like her.
Yes.
Thank you, Instagram, for telling me that that is the case.
Oh, one other note, if we're wrapping up, Miss Vicky's salt and vinegar chips, way better than Cape Cod salt and vinegar chips. Just putting that out there. If you're going to fight
that's true
for chips in your vending machine, why not just try to get the best mass market one out there? I'm not saying Miss Vicky's salt and vinegar chips are the best kettle ones. I'm just saying from the ones you can pick up in a grocery store easily, that's probably the safe bet. Thoughts?
Agree. Cape Cod's vinegar is too vinegary and not malty enough.
If we're wrapping up with what this show means to us personally, I'm very into Jack's shawl collar cardigan and sweatpant look. That is my aesthetic for 2018. Thank you, show, for letting me get away with that. Just kidding. The show doesn't think that's okay, but I do.
All right, everybody, it is time to go around the dial. Everybody's going to talk about something they've been watching recently. Our first stop, Tara.
Hi, I wanted to give a quick endorsement of Two Dope Queens. This is the HBO hour-long variety late-night show adaptation of the podcast hosted by Phoebe Robinson and Jessica Williams. It premiered last Friday. It's in the time slot on Friday nights after High Maintenance. And the two of them, I don't listen to their podcast, I might start now though, are super charming. Their outfits are amazing. We also got a glimpse of their week two looks, and they're also gorgeous. They look great. They are doing a good job, I think, of highlighting stand-up comedy from people that don't necessarily get a huge amount of attention, or at least not as much as they should. In episode one, we see Michelle Buteau, and formerly of Enlisted, which we've talked about on this podcast before, and Baron Vaughn, also a cast member on Grace and Frankie. And in episode two, we get, among others, Aparna Nancherla from BoJack Horseman and Corporate too. She's, I believe, a recurring cast member on that. And also Rhea Butcher, who is a lesbian stand-up comic and the former star of Take My Wife on CISO RIP, which I know you loved, Monty.
I did.
So it's good. They're really charming. It's like very loose energy. It's them on stage in front of a huge audience at the King's Theater in Brooklyn, which, beautiful theater. They interviewed Jon Stewart in the first episode, so if that's your thing, great. I could take it or leave it, but whatever. It's a good show. They're great. Even if all you do is tune in to look at what they're wearing and turn it off, I think you will be very satisfied by it.
I thought the presentation was actually like too loose. Like it seemed to points they were like scanning for things to say, especially with Jon Stewart when they were introducing him.
Perhaps
like that whole segment seemed to go on way longer than it should have. Loosey-goosey.
That's a good note.
But it was funny.
And for my plug, I will mention my podcast on Will and Grace that I do with Kevin O'Keefe, Will and Grace and Kevin and Tara. Will and Grace, of course, is off for the rest of the month of February, season 9 of Will and Grace, that is, because of the Olympics. But we are going back to season 1, so we will have episodes dropping all this month. While Will and Grace is not bringing you anything new, we will every Thursday morning.
And now it is Monty's turn.
Okay. RuPaul's Drag Race is great, but it's very clean. It's almost respectable. It's on VH1. It's mainstream. So I was delighted to finally learn about a show called Dragula, which has 2 seasons on Amazon Prime. They're less interested in your eleganza than in your ability to vomit fake blood all over the first 3 rows of the audience. Instead of creativity, uniqueness, nerve, and talent, the 3 words that they keep repeating on this show are filth, glamour, and horror. And they clearly like filth and horror the most. So it's mostly a much grimier drag race until what they call the extermination challenges, which are basically Fear Factor. There was a zombie challenge, and the bottom contestants had to eat brains without their hands. And that meant that one of them, and still in their full ridiculous makeup, so that meant one of them, while made up like a giant bunny in a straitjacket, got to make a big dramatic speech about how she hasn't eaten animal products in years, but by God, she is not going home today. And that's all very well, except the other contestants were standing like 10 feet away, observing that this speech was taking away time that she could have been spending face down in a pile of brains. There was another extermination where the bottom contestants were sealed in coffins and had maggots and other stuff dropped on their faces. Dragula is super fun, and I think there's going to be a 3rd season this year. And right now, 2 seasons on Amazon Prime, and they are so much fun.
Awesome.
Huh.
I'm going to check that out.
For my plugs, I would like to direct people to The Villain Edit, a podcast about low to mid-tier competitive reality shows that I host with my girlfriend, Rias. It can be found at theincomparable.com. And while you're there, check out the most recent episode of The Incomparable Radio Theater, which appears to have the title I'll Write Now, but is actually kind of a cross between The Jack Benny Show and P.G. Woodhouse. And that episode is called, and I promise this was somebody else's idea, The Monty Ashley Show. I felt obliged to plug that.
Sarah D. Bunting.
So, Intervention. Intervention's 20th season, yikes, is a little different from previous formats. They're doing this kind of swarm thing, all the interventionists, including a guy I've only seen maybe once before on regular intervention, his name is Michael. His neck tattoo is truly distracting and makes him look like the Jude Law bot in AI. I mean, it's not great. This, you know, is a good looking guy. I'm not saying this to his face, mind you, because he has one of those teardrop tattoos. Anyway, they all kind of swarmed the heroin triangle, which is in Georgia near Atlanta, and try to stop the opioid addiction cycle. They're dealing with individuals. They're dealing with couples, roommates, parents and kids, sometimes siblings. It's an interesting idea, but it's a little overproduced. And this particular focus, for whatever reason, is pointing up more than usual the fact that when a subject is ODing or looks like they might be ODing, there is this clutch of cameras right there, and it would be less anxiety inducing if the production made their protocol for that stuff transparent to the viewer. Like, how are they briefed as far as interceding into a serious medical situation? Because one did occur a few episodes ago, and it's not entirely clear whether one of the other subjects called EMTs or a producer did. And while I am up, like, I understand that reducing my anxiety is really not the point of this show at all. However, could the show please work a little harder to try to find willing subjects who don't have pets? Because when an addicted couple is living in a Lexus coupe with their 2 small dogs, one of the dogs goes walkabout because addicted couple, it's really giving me agita. See also Tony's cat sniffing her crack in a recent episode. And I don't mean,
Jesus,
but like, oh my God, it's like in Trainspotting when that guy OD'd and this tiny kitten is wandering around his room. And finally, a tertiary character is like, you know, reassures us in so many words that the kitten was fine. And I was like, oh, thank God. I know pets can be a great comfort and motivator, and I'm not trying to, you know, remove anyone's companions or anything. It just stresses me out. And speaking of the opioid epidemic and its pet collateral damage, Eve Beatty and I are talking about Showtime's The Trade on The Blotter Presents this week that will have dropped as you're listening to this. The Trade is not covering new material, but it's very effectively affectingly done. And there is a very good dog in the first two episodes, so give episode 43 a listen. And Dan Patrick Brady is back next week to talk about Natalie Wood. And that's my plug.
Okay, so I started watching Netflix's Altered Carbon. It's sort of a cyberpunk thing. I don't really want to talk about the plot too much because, one, I'm not all the way through it. And two, I don't really care. I just wanted to say a couple things. One is we as a society have to agree to stop hiring Joel, was it Kinnerman? Is that his name?
Kinnerman. Yeah,
this guy is such a charisma hole. He sucks in energy and never spits it back out. He joins the ranks of Joel Edgerton and that guy who was in the Clash of the Titans sequel. What's that dude's name?
No human knows.
Oh, Sam Worthington.
Sam Worthington.
Why would you say Avatar? Yeah, yeah, totally. That guy.
Because I totally blocked Avatar from my mind.
I understand.
Yeah, as one does.
The hook of Altered Carbon is that you get these little Game Boy cartridges you stick in your spine, and that way when your body dies, somebody can take out this Game Boy cartridge and stick it in another body, and it's still you. You're just got a new meat bag. And in the first episode, there is this Asian, he's sort of an assassin type, and then he wakes up like centuries in the future, and he's Joel Kinnerman.
Sure.
Beigerman.
He is so much more interesting before he was Joel than after. And when you have like a character is on screen for 10 minutes and then like you get the main character, it's like, oh, can't we bring back the guy whose body was shot up? You know, you got a problem. Anyways, so let's just agree that these three actors, we got to figure something out. We got to start pressuring Hollywood, we got to get, change.org on it. We got to somehow get moveon.org on it. We just got to make it happen.
Can we add Jeremy Renner to that list?
Yes, thank we you. Certainly could. But I think it might be too late for him.
Yeah,
like,
probably.
I think there's still a chance because we haven't heard from Avatar guy in a while. You know, we probably won't until Avatar comes back.
No, he works a lot. It's just in shit that we don't watch.
Well, that's fine. Out of sight, out of mind, as far right. as I'm concerned.
Right.
Okay. And then the other part of the Netflix thing was this whole Cloverfield marketing thing that they did after the Super Bowl. They had a Super Bowl commercial. It's like, guess what? Remember that Cloverfield movie you might have heard about? We've got it. And it's going to air in an hour after the Super Bowl ends. And there is such a huge problem when the most interesting thing about the movie is how you sold it to an audience rather than the movie itself. Like this movie is just like, it's so derivative and also boring and also barely anything to do with Cloverfield franchise.
It's such a waste of an excellent cast too.
It really was. And frankly, if you want to see a better movie than Cloverfield Paradox, watch 2010 because it's almost exactly the same movie, but with more interesting characters and, you know, without the monster thing, you know, happening. And you don't lose anything when there's no monster because, frankly, there's barely any monsters in Cloverfield Paradox. So, you know, good on Netflix for turning a bad situation into something that got so much buzz. Here I am talking about it. But if you haven't watched it yet, you definitely do not need to. You're not missing out on any water cooler discussion beyond the fact that it was a snooze. Netflix, right. You're doing a lot of things wrong this week. Smarten up.
Jerks.
It is time for The Canon. Monty Ashley is presenting this week, and may I say, this is something very new to The Canon. I don't think we've had anything like this before.
I am presenting Sesame Street, episode 1839 from November 24, 1983. Sesame Street is a show that uses a combination of people and puppets to teach children how to count and spell. It has endured because it's really smart and because the puppets are incredibly appealing to children. I personally may not be into Elmo, but when I was the right age, I would absolutely not shut up about Grover and Kermit. I still might not shut up about them. The humans were always secondary for me. The kids were interchangeable because they weren't Muppets, and the adults were boring because they were adults. But I always liked Mr. Hooper, who ran the general store. I mostly liked him for his relationship with Big Bird, who had an extremely basic running gag about forgetting that his name was Hooper. Big Bird would call him Mr. Looper, and Mr. Hooper would correct him, and I would sigh happily because I understood how the routine worked. Will Lee played Mr. Hooper for 14 years and died in 1982. Sesame Street decided to address it in the show and have Mr. Hooper actually die. This episode aired on Thanksgiving Day, 1983. They chose that day because they knew they were going to be addressing issues a little more challenging than what Near and Far looked like, and adults would be around to talk to kids. I think that probably what actually happened was that the kids were sent to watch the educational puppet show while the adults did whatever it is adults do, and then the adult stuff was interrupted by screaming and sobbing children. Happy Thanksgiving! So, it's a very big, important episode, but it's also a Sesame Street episode. There are fun things, and I'm going to go through a couple of those before getting into the important part. For instance, there's Bert talking about what love means to him for a pageant about feelings in clip one.
When I see some baby pigeons with their mommy in a nest, I get a joyous feeling sort of rising in my chest. That's love. When I see a perfect rock or a row of paper clips, a quiet kind of pleasure makes a smile come to my lips. That's love too.
To keep this classy, I skipped the part where Bert sings about how he loves Ernie. We're not here for giggles, we're here for emotions. It's also got Grover and a couple other monsters singing a song about how they are not only fuzzy, but also blue, in clip two.
Fuzzy and blue, that's me, I'm fuzzy and blue. It's just the way that I grew. Love being fuzzy and blue. I do, I'm fuzzy and blue. You see, I'm fuzzy and blue. Yay me, I'm happy to be so fuzzy and blue.
I just put that in because I like the song. I like the straight up goofiness of it. Later on, Grover sings a song with Madeline Kahn. A lot of the segments in this episode are strategically chosen to build up to the reveal at the end of the show. It starts off with a Muppet named Forgetful Jones talking about the importance of happy memories, and later on we see a one-day-old baby. And there's a series of segments of Big Bird behaving like a child, like when Gordon finds him walking with his head between his legs in clip three.
Oh, hi, Gordon.
Hi, Big Bird.
Nice day, isn't it?
Yeah, very nice. Big Bird.
Hmm?
Why are you doing that?
What?
That.
Oh.
With your head between your legs?
Oh, because.
Because why?
Just because.
You're walking with your head between your legs just because. Can't you give me a better reason than just because?
Well, I guess I could try, but I don't think I could come up with a better reason.
Taken on its own, that's just impeccable logic. As Big Bird says, you can't ask for a good reason for something that doesn't have one. While you're watching the show, that's just a fun, goofy little scene, just like the Fuzzy and Blue song. But it's going to mean something later on. Many of the Sesame Street Muppets are basically adults. Bert and Ernie have their own apartment and go to movies. Oscar could not be that much of a grouch without years of practice. Kermit has a job. But Big Bird is a child. He's canonically about 6 years old, and he has a child's understanding of the world. At one point, he thought the alphabet was all one long word, which he turned into a smash hit single. I'm assuming it was a smash hit. It was a smash hit in my house. Of all the characters on the show, Big Bird is the one who's the most often the audience surrogate. So it makes sense when he finds all the adults talking and he wants to inject himself into the conversation without really knowing what they're talking about. The show still won't give away what it's about, because it would rather land a solid burn on the boring stuff adults talk about in clip 4.
What are you going to talk about now?
Well, how about politics?
That's all right. That's good.
Hey, not even standing on one leg could make that interesting.
Bye-bye. He's got a point.
Yeah, take that, adults, and your stupid politics talk. Before that, the adults were talking about a baby being born, which is going to be needed later in the show to show the circle of life. Now, up to this point, the show has been slow-rolling everything. It's just a regular, fun, happy Sesame Street episode. But a lot of the little lessons and songs that make up the episode have been very carefully chosen. We don't learn what open looks like. We learn what it looks like when things are closed. Bird is sad because he lost his paper clips, which, we already learned, are something he loves very much. Even with that, though, when Big Bird starts giving the cast portraits he's drawn of them, I don't think any of the children in 1983 that were watching were ready for what happens when Big Bird is left holding his drawing of Mr. Hooper. Clip 5, please.
Well, I can't wait till he sees it. Say, where is he? I want to give it to him. I know, he's in the store.
A Big Bird?
Hmm?
He's not in there.
Oh, then where is he?
Big Bird, don't you remember we told you? Mr. Hooper died. He's dead.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Well, I'll give it to him when he comes back.
Big Bird, Mr. Hooper's not coming back.
Why not?
Big Bird, when people die, they don't come back.
Ever?
No, never.
Why not?
It goes on like that, and it gets much more heartbreaking. All of the actors are getting through lines as best they can while they talk about the death of the guy they worked for 14 years. They're having to tell the most innocent character on the show about the permanence of death, and they've chosen not to soft pedal it. They don't say, he passed away. They go right for, he's dead. I find this scene just heartbreaking, and I love the way it picks up on the themes of the show that have been sneakily introduced, from the importance of remembering the good things to sadness. It ends with Gordon speaking to Big Bird in his own terms in clip 6.
Big Bird, it has to be this way because...
Just because?
Just because.
Oh. You know, I'm gonna miss you, Mr. Looper.
That's Hooper, Big Bird. Hooper.
Right.
Then the scene ends, and I assume everyone connected with the show cried for a week. The audience also needs a break. So the next scene is a quiet video showing rain nourishing some flowers, which bloom to show us that life goes on. And then there's a cartoon showing that if you pick the flowers, they die. The episode ends with the baby that they set up a few scenes ago. Since the show is for children, they get pretty explicit about the connection between birth and death in clip 7.
Coochie-coochie-coo. Gee, you know what the nice thing is about new babies? What?
What's that, Big Bird?
What?
Well, one day they're not here, and the next day, here they are.
That's right. Yeah, you know, that's true.
Coochie-coochie-coo.
So it ends on a happy note, if you like babies. Sesame Street is a show for children, but it addressed the subject of death more maturely than most adult shows. This show took its responsibility to educate children seriously and he cared about more than what five hats look like, although that's also important. The writers and actors lost a friend and coworker and turned it into an opportunity to make a statement about how life goes on and how life doesn't go on. This is a great and important episode of a great and important series, and I suggest that it go into the canon. Thank you.
So I have a question to the rest of the panel. So this was 83. I do remember like when this happened because it was a big news item, even though I was like 11, but even I heard of it. Had you experienced a family death while you were watching Sesame Street, or like would have this have been your first lesson?
Yeah, I hadn't had anyone in my that I knew die.
My Nana, my maternal grandmother had died already.
Right.
My brother, who's 5 years younger, and I were like mostly out of the Sesame Street zone. But like, instead of letting Sesame Street do this, like my mother sort of took us aside and was like, this episode is coming. So we had to have a talk about the episode in which you had the talk about death. But like, you know, I was 10 and I got it. And my brother didn't really care. So he just watched TV differently. My mother always likes to say that Sassy, which is what we called it in my house, taught me to read. This is not really true. She and my dad did that. But we were parked in front of the rock block of Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and Electric Company. Like, before my brother came along, that was my entire TV diet. And then for several years after he came along. So watching, like, even knowing what is coming in this episode, which I have seen before, I think, when it aired, even when you know what's coming, there is something extremely soothing and familiar to me about everything from, like, just how 70s the cartoons still are. Like,
yeah.
Jive 5, my man.
Yeah.
Oh, my
Love
God.
Jive 5.
He's the bat. Like, when the hat pops out, I was like, yeah, Sesame Street, you're so cool. And lyrics that are inadvertently hilarious to adults, like, we'll show you just how fun a Jay can be. Like, I'm sure you will. Sesame Street. I mean, this was like really fun. I forgot how long the episodes were, too. Like, a Children's Television Workshop really knew how to give parents who just needed to take a crap and not have the 3-year-old wandering in after them a break.
Sesame Street's greatest legacy.
Well, look, I think they would be
shit in peace.
Yes, I think they would be content with that. Certainly, my mother wrote many glowing letters to them about that fact. But this, I mean, this is like really good. It's really good TV. It holds up. It's well paced. I don't know if anyone else is like a regular watcher, but Monty, did you, once you knew the bit about Big Bird never getting Mr. Hooper's name right, did you sort of wait patiently for that rare episode in which he would be referred to as Mr. Pooper?
Yes. Like, it's right there, guys. Come on.
They would hold it back. That was like a very rare. They'd be like, Mr. Zooper. I'm like, God damn it. It's Pooper's turn. Where are you? but yeah, I thought this was good. I mean, I don't remember what my reaction was to it at the time, but I do remember being upset because Bob was upset. Like, Bob loses it in this scene, which I think was like a really, I think it was great that they left it in and these adults are having legit reactions to what has really happened to their coworker. They're actually grieving. But as a kid, I remember just being like, oh, this shit is bad because Bob's crying. Like, those are tears. And, you know, to show a grown up man crying was a big deal. And I lost it again watching this. And it was just like, oh, Bob, like, clearly was not sure he could get through the whole sentence. But when you get to this end and all the callbacks that you mentioned to everything that they've been building toward, and then once you're crying, then it's like, here's some soft rains falling on flowers, and, you know, everything is part of life. It's really well done. And I think that's always been the great thing about Sesame Street, is that you could enjoy some of the above the kids' heads jokes, but also the craftsmanship of how this was built, that they understood adults would also be watching. And you see that same working on a bunch of levels thing in Pixar stuff a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this was a little sad to revisit the sad passing of Mr. Hooper. And, you know, today Big Bird is an emotional man. Like, it, you know, it was a little rough, but excellent presentation. And I enjoyed this hour of children's television. Tara.
Yeah, I don't have a huge amount to add. This was a great presentation, as Sarah said. The delicacy with which the episode is constructed is something that you only really notice in retrospect if you don't know which one this is, Monty. Which we didn't.
Yes.
You know, all it is like he just put the number of the episode in our doc.
Yeah, no, I didn't clue in until halfway through. I was like, what is the classic? Yeah. Like, is this the one where the pinball thing is?
Yeah, that I was like, it's either this or that little Muppet is HIV positive. And I was like, well,
not 1983.
Here we go.
Yeah. As Sarah said, it's very soothing to watch. That every segment is so short. I mean, that's how you keep a kid's attention or a bored adult. You know, like it's just you don't get a chance to get sick of anything. It switches up, and the 7D Z-osity of the animation is a true delight. I also wrote down Jai 5, and I loved the segment with the kid taking dance lessons at Alvin Ailey Theater. That's all about dance, and then ends with, "When I grow up, I want to be a policeman." Like, no, no art in the carceral state. Got it.
And the great thing about that segment, though, is that dance instructor was not.
Oh, yes. No, he was amazing.
He was just like, yeah. Yeah, he was great.
Yes,
yeah.
He was very strict. But this was everything about it was beautifully done. And I've seen that drawing of Mr. Hooper so many times since this episode aired. I remember that better than I remember the actual episode. Like this, you know, it's not Thanksgiving in Canada. So whenever this aired, I would have been in school. So I'm sure I didn't see it at the time. But yeah, Sesame Street was certainly a part of the fabric of my childhood. Every day, every weekday at 11 a.m., right before lunch on CBC, there it was. So it was a pleasure to get to rewatch it, even though it was, of course, devastating. Dave.
I think it's a testament to Children's Television Workshop that there has been no show of this ilk that has even come close to Sesame Street mm-hmm. does. Like, it's also a testament to the way public broadcasting funding works, that you can have a show like this that is divorced from the usual economics of television and advertising. Compare and contrast Sesame Street with Barney, right? And who's going to take Barney over Sesame Street? Nobody. That's who. Where else is a kid going to learn something like this besides like a grandmother's funeral? And in that environment, everybody is so freaked out and sad that it's really hard for the kid to process anything. That's what I was asking before. Like if anybody, you know, like what's the difference between learning about life and death on Sesame Street versus being thrown into the fire when somebody actually dies and nobody, your family has really discussed it with you. And then they're discussing with you at their worst time. And because kids are so reactive, you know, it's like, then your grandmother, you know, she's passed away, blah, blah, blah. Like that's like traumatic to the kid, even if the kid outwardly is just like, okay, you know, like as kids do. So like, it is like a public service almost like an episode like this. It's Sesame Street is so much more than just like a babysitting show. The difference between putting this on and slapping in that VHS copy of Aladdin to keep your kids quiet for an hour and a half is, you know, a world of difference.
A whole new world of difference.
On that tip too, sorry to interrupt you, Dave, but I just wanted to call out what Monty said about that they say he died, he's dead, as opposed to any kind of euphemism like passed away. Like it's so smart to not make it more confusing to a kid to like, you know, sort of soften what's actually happened versus keep it in terms that are clear and factual and that they will understand at their whatever their level is.
In the very first, I forget what the first animated segment was, but just all of them having that sort of late 70s vibe to them, but like took me back to my childhood in a way I haven't experienced in a long time. Yeah. You know, because it was such an early, you know, I was born in 72. So like when I was watching Sesame Street, these were actually contemporary cartoons. Mm-hmm. And it just like instantly transported me back. It was a really weird feeling. I was saying earlier, like the one that I always waited for was the, you know, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 pinball one. Because, you know, also being of that age, pinball and video game arcades were like sprouting up everywhere in my youth. So it was a very exciting time to watch Sesame Street.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm glad that Grover was in here because Grover was always my favorite character, especially Super Grover. This is pre-Elmo, obviously. The one thing that happened after Sesame Street, during my time with Sesame Street, was a whole Mr. Snuffleupagus thing where they decided that adults not believing kids about things that were happening was actually a bad lesson. So now Mr. Snuffleupagus is like known to everybody.
Yep.
I feel kind of cheated there that I never saw that reveal. So maybe I'll go hunt that and see the episode. If somebody out there knows what episode number that is, I'd be interested.
Sure, you can Google it. Years later, though, I feel like.
Oh, totally. But I remember that news story and going, what the fuck? How come they get that revelation? You know, like,
you just want to see Big Bird saying, I told you, people, I told you.
Do you remember the Looney Tunes episode where the kids in the cartoon were watching a Roadrunner cartoon?
Yes.
Bang.
That they show like twice in your whole childhood. Yes.
And then the whole thing was that the kids were waiting for the moment the coyote actually caught it. That was sort of like the feeling when I learned that Mr. Snuffleupagus became a known entity. Oh, yeah. Just like, kind of like retroactively pissed off, just like even though it had been 20 years since I, you know, laid eyes on Sesame Street. Anyways, this is not Sesame Street memories. This is this episode. It is a great episode. It is an important lesson. And, you know, when you're watching it for as it happens, perhaps not knowing the Mr. Hooper segment that follows, you're like, well, this is an episode of Sesame Street and all these segments are what they are and they're all very good. And then when you actually see the craft that went into all the buildup towards the revelation and then even just the post, the little coda with the Williams kid, you have a new appreciation for the craft that goes into creating a kid's show. It's not just here's a purple dinosaur, he's singing this insipid song and give us your money. It can be so much more. And I think this episode is a fantastic representation of that.
I wanted to add one more thing before we vote, that it never downpedaled how New York-y it is, even when it was airing episodes when like the city was on fire around it, basically. Like the kid in his dance lesson, like what a strong accent. And in my family that like, you know, I got to go to the store. Do you need anything? It's like, you know, I need a quart of milk, a loaf of bread and a stick of butter. And even if you don't need that stuff, you just got to say that you do. And you got to say it in the stick of butter. I don't think I've called it butter in 40 years. And I always have loved that unapologetic cittiness of it.
Yep.
In the opening theme song, those kids are playing in like an abandoned lot in garbage.
Yeah.
Isn't the setting supposed to be like the barrio? Like, isn't that the...
It's something supposed to be like Brooklyn.
Oh, is it?
You know, the stoops look very Brooklyn-y to me, but yeah.
Yeah, the other thing, just on that tip, just is the one of the cartoons was this pumped up Hans and Franz looking letter M. And he's just like super, like, he just like, he seems like a guy who's just angling for a fight. He kind of has this John Wayne accent. And it was just like, you know, just spouting off all these M things he's going to do to people. I'm like, yeah, that's great. I love it. That's the kind of thing as a kid that I'd just be like, you know, here's this macho, you know, macho guy, macho man, doing all this stuff. And I was like, yeah, that's Sesame Street.
But he had the face of a blue meanie, which was weird for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He had a lot of eyeshadow on for him, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
All right. Let's put this to a vote. Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes, sir.
Tara Ariano.
Look, I obviously Monty might have worried after our discussion on AP Bio about whether we were too monstrous to focus in, but I am not such a monster that I would not absolutely enthusiastically induct this.
Yeah, absolutely. Show. What a great submission. I never would have thought of submitting an episode of Sesame Street myself. So Monty, thank you very much. And I will vote yes to make that a sweep. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Sesame Street. Episode 1000, 839. You know, the one where Mr. Hooper died. You have been inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Oh.
It is time for... Oh, we lost the N.
Oh, no.
Opa.
Winner of the week, Tara, please.
Becca Martinez, prior to last week, was just known as the contestant on the current season of The Bachelor, who has the audacity, the bravery to show up on this show with a pixie haircut, not the usual past the shoulder length loose waves that is apparently required, I had thought, prior to the season of every bachelorette on the show. But there's more to her story. Apparently, she was on the missing persons list in Humboldt County, California. This season of The Bachelor is like a month in. And it only came out now that, like, yeah, there was some weird story about her being on the missing person list. So congratulations to her. Not missing anymore. But also, what is this story? I suspect there's more to it. It's incredibly weird. So we will be keeping an eye on this one, because what the fuck?
She was on attention seeker Rumspringa.
Perhaps.
Loser of the week?
Oh, Bill Belichick. I would say it pains me, but it doesn't. First of all, the most recent 30 for 30, the two Bills, should have been really entertaining, but was it kind of a dud? It did not do what that franchise does best, which is make even non-fans or not particularly fans of a given sport feel knowledgeable and understand where the drama comes from. Not to mention that it really didn't feel like either of the Bills gave shit one that they hadn't been in the same room in however long. Like, certainly Parcells was like, I'm in the Hall of Fame. I don't have to care about this wind-shirted nozzle anymore. And then Belichick loves the Super Bowl. That's it.
All right. Speaking about that's it, do you know what time it is? It's game time. That's what. Welcome back to Game Time. This is the start of the new season. You may remember last week, I won.
Yeah, you did.
Today we are playing Cliffhangers from Erica, who earns herself an extra credit, which is redeemable for an extra hot great mini topic of her choosing. Extra hot great minis soon to have their own dedicated feed.
While we're paused, I will just interject here and say,
wait, no, I've written into the process now, right, Tara, so I can. Okay. Yes. It's a new dawn of a new era for Game Time. All right. So today we are playing Cliffhangers. Players will be read the final bit of dialogue from a season finale that ends in a cliffhanger. Certain names have been redacted. Occasionally, more than one character speaks. I will let you know when that is happening. A correct answer gets you 2 points. If a hint is needed, I will give you the speakers of the lines. All right, the character names.
Gotcha.
This will occasionally be something along the lines of unnamed police officer. So sometimes that hint will get you something. Sometimes it won't.
Sure.
A correct answer after the hint is worth 1 point. However, for an extra point after the answer has been guessed or revealed, players can guess which season cliffhanger it was for a bonus point.
Ooh.
Oh, shit.
So each question is worth a potential of 3 points.
Okay.
All right.
Could the vice president of Steel Meals, Tara Ariano, please remind us who has any?
Oh, my God. I just said it's part of the process now. You lose 2 Dave points. All right.
Okay.
Some more information. No shows are repeated. All the shows mentioned in this game aired for more than one season. Tara, can you please tell Sarah and Monty about the Steel Mill situation?
All right. Thank you. Sarah DeBunting, you have one Steel Mill. Valued guest, you have two.
Delicious.
All right. And to remind you, a Steel Mill can be invoked after someone else has given an incorrect answer, but before I tell you the real answer, it is up to you to get in between those two things.
Yep.
All right. Let's throw it to Pinky to see who's going first today.
We will start with Tara.
All right. Tara, Monty, Sarah is our order. Are we ready to play cliffhangers?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
32 questions today, 2 equalizer score breaks.
32 questions?
32. What'd I say?
32.
Well, there's 3 of us.
Yeah, it should be a multiple of 3.
Yeah, should be, shouldn't
yeah.
it?
Is this also
so
part of the process?
27 questions or 30?
30 questions.
And two shits and giggles tiebreakers.
All right, take him away one more day point from Sarah for giving me lip.
Worth it.
All right.
I'm winning already.
Tara Ariano.
Yes.
Agent Blank died last night from an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. Now, for 2 points, yep. Name the show. I can give you a hint, which would be the character who said that.
Yes, I would like a hint, please.
The hint is Dana Scully.
Okay.
That show.
That show is The X-Files.
All right. Now, for an extra point, any idea what season that would be?
So I don't lose anything for just taking a shot, right?
Nope.
6.
4. Oh. All right, 1 point for Tara. To Monty, the worst of this is over, right? Tell me we're going to be okay. I'm going to give a different voice to the second character. Don't read anything into the tone of my voice. I just want to make it different. The worst of this is over, right? Tell me we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. We're going to be okay.
I would like a hint, please.
Abby Lockhart and John Carter.
Warlord of Mars?
Pardon me?
John Carter, Warlord of Mars? It's.
Yes. Abby and John Carter. What's that show?
Well, no idea, which means it's a show I don't watch. So I'm going to say ER.
Nice. You are correct.
Nice.
Guess. What season was that?
Okay.
Given your extensive knowledge of ER.
Somewhere between 1 and 500.
Yes.
7.
Oh, you're so close.
Oh, 8. Oh, man.
Season 8.
Dang. I will take it.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting, here's your first question. Agent Blank? We found Leo Johnson. He's been shot. Agent Blank? Agent?
I'm just going to actually guess that it's Alias.
Here we go. It's not. That was Annie Brennan from Twin Peaks. Mm. Now you get to guess what season of Twin Peaks. That was a cliffhanger.
2?
1. Oh, number two was the Where's Annie thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, or How's Annie? Annie.
How's
yeah.
Annie?
Yeah. All right, back to Tara.
Yes.
Shall I go on?
Hint.
That was said by a minister, priest, or priest.
Oh, damn it. I realized it as soon as you said. That's Friends.
It is Friends. What season, Tara?
Oh, God. Season 4?
Yay! Nice.
Monty, what the fork is a blank? Why can't I say fork?
That's The Good Place.
2 points. What season?
1.
Yeah, of course.
Dang,
from the episode I got into the canon.
Sure did.
Everything's coming up, Monty. Mr. Blank, fire.
Hint.
Mr. Blank, fire.
Hint, please.
William Riker.
That would be Star Trek The Next Generation.
Good for one. What episode? I mean, what season was that the cliffhanger of?
4.
Tree. That was 3. Was that the one with the Borg?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, oh, big one. Get ready, Tara.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. No extra charge for that burp. You know what this whole year has made so crystal clear to me? You have no idea what your life's going to look like in 5 years from now, or 1 year from now, or a week. It all turns on a dime. And the things that matter, you don't want to turn around and realize you've lost them while you were waiting. You know I love you so much. Blank, will you marry me?
I thought I knew and then I didn't. Is this, I'm just going to take a shot too. Is this Scrubs? Shit.
It is not. That was Charlie Epps from Numthriers. What season, Tara?
I don't know. Three?
No.
What?
Five.
Cursive
soundboard.
Tease.
Mean.
What season was it?
That was a little taste of what it's going to be like next week on this episode. That was season five.
Okay.
You know. I was gentle as I was able, and that's the last we'll fucking speak of it, blank. He wants me to tell him something pretty.
Deadwood?
Correct. Season?
Two?
Season three. Right. The last asterisk, Deadwood. Perhaps. We'll see.
Right.
We'll see.
Oh, yeah, it's coming back any day now.
Day now. The 14th possible revival of Deadwood is nigh. There's just one more thing, one more miracle, blank, for me. Don't be dead. Would you, just for me, just stop it? Stop this. I know you've seen it.
Don't be dead. Buffy? The Vampire Slayer?
That's what I thought.
Not a bad guess. That was John Watson from Sherlock. What season?
Oh.
What season, Sarah, for a point?
That's the end of season two.
It is.
Nice.
Oh, God, we've got people down, people down, people down. Who's been hit? Who's been hit?
I'm going to take a shot again. Is this The West Wing?
Nice.
Hey!
Season
one?
Correct. End of season one. Well, unnamed secret servant agent said that. Okay. I've got a pain in my sawdust. That's what's the matter with me. Something is wrong with my little inside. I'm just as sick as can be. Don't let me faint. Someone get me a fan. Someone please run for the medicine man. Everyone hurry as fast as you can because I've got a pain in my sawdust.
I would like a hint, please.
Yeah, okay, good luck with this hint. Natalie Davis.
Is it Crazy Ex-Girlfriend?
It is not. That is Natalie Davis. Don't know who that is because I wasn't watching CSI during this season, which is...
Nine?
Seven.
All right.
Dang.
All right. This is for
Sarah.
Sarah. Morning, Greg.
Morning, Larry.
Hint.
That is Jake Peralta and Raymond Holt.
Ooh.
That would be Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Correct. Now, do you remember the contacts and therefore the season?
I remember neither of those things, so I'm just going to guess that it's the end of season two.
Incorrect. That was the end of season three where they go to Florida, wherever they went on witness protection. Number 12, taking us into our score break.
What?
Is that right?
Nope. No.
Oh, I must have missed one, guys.
The last one should have been should have been number 12.
Yeah, what's going on here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
11, 12.
Guys, I figured out what's happened. They put two number fives in.
Oh.
So it actually was 33 questions.
But no tiebreaker.
No, there was 33 questions. We just had two number fives. So I just got to rearrange things a little bit.
Okay.
Okay. So that was the score break. So here
okay.
we go.
Monty and I are tied with six each. Sarah has three.
All right. Sarah, that means you.
Wow.
The Crossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone. Just doing a little housekeeping while that was going on, guys.
Good luck, Sarah.
Thanks.
All right, good luck, Sarah. You need three of these.
You don't have to wish her luck.
Yeah,
I just chose to.
Classics. What variety show's host bad moods were blamed on a car crash that broke his pelvis, both kneecaps, and a hip?
What variety show?
Yeah.
Ed Sullivan?
This is Arthur Godfrey. Whoops.
Nope.
I got the right answer. You didn't. Sitcom. What Cheers character's nickname is Mayday?
Oh.
Day?
Cheers character's nickname is Mayday.
Is that Sam Malone? I don't remember.
Mayday Malone.
Yes. Thank God.
Relief pitcher.
Right. Drama. What trio of investigators could be hired by dialing 213-555-0267?
Charlie's Angels?
Hey!
Do you know how many points are at stake here? You get 6 points if you get this.
Shit!
What? Sure,
what cartoon creating team's first names were Bill and Joseph?
I'm sorry, what category is this?
Kids and Games. What cartoon creating team's first names were Bill and Joseph? I'm going to guess sometimes known as William and Joe.
I'm pretty sure that's Messieurs Hanna and Barbara.
You're correct. All right, let's just round them up. Stars, what British comedian does Jackie Wright play straight man to?
I don't know. Tiny Tim? I don't know.
Benny Hill. And wild card, how many of the top 10 rated shows in the 58-59 season were Westerns? 5, 6, or 7?
6.
7, but it don't matter because you got it. Scores
yeah, you did.
Now, please.
Sarah is now in first place with 9 points.
Hey.
I still have 6 each.
Well, that's the way it goes in the equalizer zone. Back to the game and back to Tara. Mm-hmm. This is number 13, actually.
Okay. Yep.
Well, I couldn't possibly solve this mystery. Can you? Yeah, I'll give it a shot. I mean, it's my job, right?
This is The Simpsons. Oh, God, what season was that? I think it's season 5? 4?
6. Season 6. That was a who shot Mr. Burns.
Dang it.
Cliffhanger. All right, yeah. Number 14 for Monty. You are not to see him anymore. What did you say to him? That's two different people. You are not to see him anymore. What did you say to him?
Oh. Well, that sounds super familiar. But I don't know whether that's because it's something I've seen or because it's kind of generic dialogue. I'm going to have to ask for a hint, please.
All right. Two characters that said that. Their first names are Jim and Brenda. Both their last names are Walsh.
That sounds like it's probably Beverly Hills 90210 then.
Okay, but what season was that? And there's a big hint. You've eliminated many seasons by one of those characters.
Maybe you have. I sure haven't. I'm going to say season 1.
Close. Season 2.
All right.
But you got your point.
Don't patronize me.
Sorry.
Dick.
All right, get their clones.
All right, get their clones.
All right, get their clones.
Clone High?
It is a cartoon. That's Thaddeus Venter from the Venter Brothers. What season?
I should have steel mealed that. I forgot I had them.
I know how many episodes you've seen of this show. 1.
Yeah. I don't remember it either. Let's go with season 2.
Season 1. Season 1. Okay, whose turn is this, please?
Tara.
Me.
Tara, we have to go back.
Last.
Season.
Oh, God. Fucking season 5?
3. Season 3. All right, Monty. I slept with him and it was good. Oh, how's that for stirring things up? Have a great summer, everyone. Bye. Then another person says, yep, one big happy family.
That's fun. I would like a hint, though.
Jordan Sullivan, John Dorian.
I feel like I've heard those words before. Felicity?
Wait, before you answer, I'm gonna give you a better hint because
that'd be a much better hint.
I would feel better giving you this character name version. Jordan Sullivan and JD.
Oh, I do appreciate that. Scrubs.
Yeah, that's a fair thing.
And what season do you think that was?
Ooh, again, somewhere between 1 and 500. 3.
That was the season 1 cliffhanger.
Yeah, good for them. Mm-hmm.
All right, that was number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Spread Eagle.
This is number 18. Personally, I kind of want to slay the dragon. Let's go to work.
It's really tempting.
Oh, ooh.
What?
Wait, before you answer, you have been given a free hint by by Erica.
Okay.
This is a series finale. Series finale.
Okay.
Exciting hint.
Hmm. I will still take a hint.
Okay. The hint is Angel.
I feel like I'm less likely to get to use my steel meal now.
Angel.
Yes, that was the hint, Sarah. What season?
Series finale? That's season 5.
Nice.
Nice.
Nice. Okay, guys. 19. Mm-hmm. I mean, doesn't anybody care? I'm going to tour with Jennifer Lopez. Other person, I care. Does she need another? No!
That's Will and Grace. Fucking hell. What season was that? Season 5?
Tara Ariano, host of Will and Grace and Kevin and Tara.
yeah.
Says that was the end of season 5.
Yeah?
Not even close. Season
like
8.
Ooh. Damn!
Season 8. All right. Wait, I don't understand. Blank, what are you telling me? Well, for starters, my name isn't blank.
That's the end of the season? Man, that's mean.
I remember it.
I don't, but I'm going to take a guess anyway. Out of nowhere. Alias?
Nice.
Well done. Played. 2 points. What season?
Because they're literally talking about his alias. Or her alias, I guess. Let's see. 4?
That is season. Get this. 4.
Jesus.
Yeah. Look at this guy. What the score is.
Nicely well done.
You don't have to watch Alias to know when they started shaking things up and turning the whole plot upside down.
It is not your screams I want, only your life, blood of my blood. Blah.
Not your screams I want, only your life. Hint.
Oh, fuck. Daenerys Targaryen. Oh. Did I say that right?
Yeah, close enough.
That would be Game of Thrones.
Season?
2.
Season 1. Thank you, sir. Someone get a doctor. Get a doctor.
Hint.
That was Sharon and Lee Adama.
Okay, that's Battlestar Galactica. I think that is also season 1.
Yeah, season 1, yep.
There
you go. Yeah, Boomer just shot him.
Boomer goes crazy.
Yeah.
Hello, my shadow self. Do you have any idea what it's like to starve for 2,000 years?
Hint.
That was uttered by Silas. All for Silas.
Supernatural?
That was The Vampire Diaries.
All right. Oh, of course, it's the season 3 finale.
You meant season 4. I understand how you got confused.
I stumble over my words sometimes.
Sure. This is Sarah, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
No takers? Fine. But get one thing straight if you're staying. This isn't a democracy anymore.
Hint.
Rick Grimes.
That would be The Walking Dead.
It's good for a point. What season? It's the one with all the zombies and where Rick Grimes is either really, really into being the leader or really, really just wants to be a farmer. Which one is it?
Season four.
Season two.
That's the one without all the zombies.
Damn it.
This is a very close game. I have 14 points. Sarah has 13 points. Monty has 11. Oh.
So Monty is in the equalizer challenge zone.
Yes.
Sure is.
Monty.
Good luck, Monty.
All right, Monty, you are in the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge zone. Your first question from the classics category is, what male played cousin Jeth Reen in the Beverly Hillbillies?
Max Baer Jr.
That is correct.
Wow.
Yeah. Nice. Oh, Jethro, too.
Sitcom. What sitcom did Nancy Reagan appear on to preach against drugs in 1983?
Different Strokes.
Nice.
Had Gary Coleman on her lap like a puppet.
Oh.
Drama. What editor often locked horns with Los Angeles Tribune owner Margaret Pinchot?
Lou Grant.
Oh, Monty!
What do I get if I get all six right?
Was it Steel Mills or was it double points?
It's double points, I think.
It's double points. Yeah, I think it is. Okay, yeah.
Oh, shit.
You'll get 12 points.
Shit. Good luck, Monty.
Kids and games, Monty. What quizmaster has hosted High Rollers, Headline Chasers, Can You Top This, and Gambit?
Oh, no. Could be any of them. Picking one at random. Bill Cullen?
It's our favorite named one, Wink Martindale.
Oh, yeah. Wink.
Also host of Tic-Tac-Doe.
I knew that one.
He probably hated that digital dragon of Tic-Tac-Doe. He's like, this is too new. I don't get it. I don't like it. Whose variety show was enlivened by the Flippettes? This is Stars.
The Flippettes. Oh, Flip Wilson.
The Flippettes.
Flip Wilson.
Last question. What primetime soap featured cameos by Gerald Ford and Henry Kissinger in 1983? Wow.
Jesus.
Primetime soap?
Yeah.
Dallas?
Close. Dynasty.
It's always Dynasty.
All right.
Wow.
So scores now, please.
Well, things have changed. Sarah has 13. I have 14. Monty has 17.
Ooh, he is the spread.
All right. All right, we're back to the game. Here's our last third of it. One ticket to Farhampton, please.
This is How I Met Your Mother. That's season... Oh, fuck. Nine?
Close. That was season eight. All right, Mr. Ashley. Please, will you stop, please? My lords, ladies, and gentlemen, can I ask for silence? Because I very much regret to announce that we are at war with Germany.
Downton Abbey. Season... Wait. Two?
That was the first season.
I thought it was the Titanic that closed out the first season.
That's what started it.
Oh, you're right. Okay.
What the hell are you? I'm you, only a little more bizarre.
Now kiss me.
I'm you, only a little more bizarre. Hint.
Clark Kent and Bizarro. Little on the nose.
A little bit. Is that Smallville?
Yeah, Smallville. Season?
Let's say three.
Let's say six.
Oh, dang. God. That show lasted a while.
I forgot it dragged on that long.
No, blank. I'm going to bet my life on you being the only friend I have left in this world.
Hint.
Boyd Crowder.
Oh, Justified?
Yeah.
Is that season one? Oh.
Indeed it is.
There you go.
The question for Tara, but not for Tara. I have money. I've got a lot of money. I have. Would you please don't do this? You don't have to do this.
I would like a hint, please.
All right, Tara, you'll have to help me with the second name here. But first name, Gail.
Oh,
second name,
Bedeker.
Bedeker, thank you.
Right, right. Okay, I know how to spell that. I don't have any idea what show it's from.
Poor Gail.
Want to take a wild guess?
Law and Order?
That was pretty wild.
The answer was Breaking Bad.
Oh, right. Breaking Bad. Yes, of course it was.
Gail from Breaking Bad. What season did Gail say that?
4.
Close. 3.
Well, it's going to be close. There's 3. Only like 5 seasons.
And if you haven't seen it, just know that it ends pretty well for Gail.
I like my idea of a Law and Order episode that ends with somebody just getting shot right after the verdict.
Like 1/3 of the episodes on the court.
Of SVU more so than Law and Order, but yeah.
If you have been touched by the demon, it's like being touched by the backhand of God. It makes you sacred in a way, doesn't it? Makes you unique with a kind of glory, the glory of suffering even. Now, here is my question. Do you really want to be normal?
Hint.
Unnamed priest.
Oh, God. Unnamed priest.
Yes.
Is this Supernatural?
That is a fine guess. That is, in fact, Penny Dreadful. Penny Dreadful.
Oh, okay.
What season ended that?
Since I keep getting burned by not guessing season one, I am guessing season one.
Yay! Nice.
Can't believe that worked.
Correct. All right. We've got 2 people here.
Mm-hmm.
It really does look black in the moonlight. See, this is all I ever wanted for you, blank, for both of us. It's beautiful.
Hint.
Free hint. This is a series finale.
Okay.
Actual hint, Will Graham and Hannibal Lecter. What's that show?
That's Hannibal.
What season?
Oh, my God. How many seasons were there? I can't remember if there were 3 or 4. I'm going to say 3.
Nice. Phew.
That was. All right. Here's everybody's final question coming up. So let's quickly get the scores, please.
Wait. I'm at the start of the order.
I meant that was your last question. Everybody else's final question coming up.
Okay. So you still want the scores now?
Yes, please.
Alrighty. Monty is still in the lead with 19 points. Sorry. Nope. That's wrong. I'm in the lead with 20 points. Monty has 19. Sarah has 15.
Ooh, all right. So we're still pretty tight at the top. Now here is Monty's last question.
Yep.
Captain, there's something you need to know. The changeling, before he died, he whispered something to me. Go on. He said, you're late. We are everywhere. As these quotes go, good number of hints there.
There are, but I don't recognize any of them, so I would like an hint, please.
Your hint is the two characters speaking of that last little chunk. One guy's name Odo. The other guy's name is Benjamin Sisko.
Uh-oh.
Good old Odo. And
just thinking very carefully because I don't want to screw this up. Is that Star Trek Deep Space Nine?
Indeed it is.
Good job.
Now, what season of Star Trek Deep Space Nine?
3.
Yay! Oh. Monty pulls ahead.
All right, Sarah. Like I said, sometimes there are no words, no clever quotes to neatly sum up what's happened that day. Sometimes the day just ends. Here's my additional hint. Never gonna get it.
Neat hint.
Aaron Hockner.
You might get
Hochner. It. Hochner.
I recognize that name, but I don't know from where. Newsroom.
It's Criminal Minds.
Oh, I thought it was House.
Season
1.
I knew you were going to guess it. But unfortunately, no. That's the end of the game. Score break, please, Tara Ariano.
Okay, Sarah had 15. I had 20. Monty has 21. He said it was a seafood value guess. He was right.
Valued guest. Valued guest.
Monty.
Today's episode of Extra Hot Great was brought to you by AP Bio, Two Dope Queens, Dragula, Intervention, Altered Carbon, The Letter M, The Number 5, Death, me, David T. Cole, Tara Ariano,
Fuzzy and Blue,
Sarah D. Bunting,
hang in there, Bob,
and Monty Ashley.
Just shut up there and take it, you stupid kids.
Well, I'm the mighty M, kid. So don't mess with me, or your name will be mud. Well, I can mix it up, and I can mow it down. So what do you make of that,
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.